On digital,
on the ABC Listener,
online
and on air.
In the 80th birthday week of the Country Hour, you're with Tony Briscoe.
Live from the Broadmarsh Hall.
On 936 ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
Yeah, good afternoon. Welcome to a special edition of the Country Hour, coming to you from the Broadmarsh Hall in the Jordan River Valley. It's the 80th anniversary of the Country Hour this week. It actually happens tomorrow, and like a good birthday weekend, we're stretching it out over a week. Why not? On Thursday, Larissa Smith and Meg Ferguson will host a special Country Hour from Ashgrove Cheese in the northwest of the state with some very special guests. Today, it's the Southern Midlands turn, and we have lots of special people to talk to about many different rural issues, beginning with local farmer, Southern Midlands councillor, and president of the Broadmarsh Elders League Progress Association, Donna Blackwell. Hello, Donna. Thanks for hosting us.
Thank you, Tony, for inviting us along and coming here.
It's fabulous where we're sitting. We're sitting in an ante room outside the main hall. It's not a very nice day, but it's not a very nasty day either, is it?
No, it's actually lovely looking out here. Where you're looking in front of you used to be leased by the Progress Association, and it was the local football, recreation and cricket ground. So that's why we have such a wonderful view. They used to sit here and watch it.
Tell us about the history of this particular hall and its importance to the community.
Yes. Look, the hall, this hall was built in 1947, but what we had before was the Eldersley Hall, which was built in 1913.
Okay.
And the Progress Committee were running both. But in 1967 fires, the Eldersley Hall burnt down. And doing that, this hall was way too small to host the size events that they were used to having, the big dances, and as you can imagine, they used to have quite a lot of fairs and things like that.
No TV back then.
Yes, yes, back then. So they decided that they would do up the Broadmarsh Hall. And they had to raise funds to do it. The insurance didn't cover the actual rebuild. So what you're seeing upstairs here is twice the size of the original hall.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they used to have some funny events too to raise money.
Yes, I can tell. Some of them I had to look up to see what they were. They confused me slightly. They did have fairs and cake stalls, as most places do, and ballroom and square dancing. Then they had the ugly man competition.
Oh.
Okay, so that sounds a little bit derogative, as some of these do, but what it actually was a fundraising. So it was, I think, a bit of a take-off of Miss Tasmania.
They probably dressed up badly to do that, I'd imagine.
They did.
Yeah, very
much
so.
They did, and the men really took it on board. We've actually got a photo, or a painting downstairs that one of the local boys at the time did for us, and he's donated it to us. He's in his 80s now, I think. He's in his 80s now. And the last person that won the Ugly Man competition still has the trophy, and it's now living in Brisbane.
It's travelled.
Yes.
We have another special guest with us, Eileen McKenzie, who's been involved with this hall for a long, long time. Welcome to Country Hour, Eileen.
Thank you.
How long have you been involved with this hall?
Since about 73, 74.
Yeah.
Something like that, in some capacity or another.
And you grew up in this area?
Yes.
Yeah. What sort of involvement have you had in the hall?
All sorts of things. I was a secretary for a few years. I've been booking officer for 15, I suppose. And all sorts of other bits and pieces that goes on around the place. Cleaning, obviously.
And you've seen a lot of events here and a lot of things.
It's a lot of changes.
A lot of changes, yes. Mm. Tell us about the renovations.
That's gone very well. It's taken a long time. We were closed down for 18 months while they were building.
And it's the only hall that I know of with an elevator. Donna?
Yeah, I don't know of another country hall in Tasmania that has one. If they do let us know.
Yeah. And there are community halls like this across the state. Have you had people from other rural communities that have come along and wanted to know what you've done here and what they should maybe be doing with their renovating their places?
Look, not so much, but they have come and said, oh, wow, and we should be able to do that. I guess we were fortunate that we did get a grant to do the upgrade. Because it was such an old hall, it took considerable money to do it up, and then putting the lift in took quite a bit as well. But we're more than happy to show anyone through, and we just want to see it used.
The council, you're on the Southern Midlands Council. How are things going there? How are things going on council?
I'm actually loving it. One of our councillors has just walked in. Look, they are a great bunch of people to work with. I'm learning heaps every time. And what you don't know, they certainly help you to improve your knowledge. Yeah, love it.
And you're a farmer here as well. Tell us about the farm.
Yes, my eldest son is running the farm now. He's fifth generation on the farm here. So we originally were dairy, but we're not any longer. We have fat lambs and beef, and we do a little bit of cropping for the feed. Yeah. Yep.
Eileen, when I came in this morning, you were busy, busy, busy in the kitchen. People are turning up. What have you got there?
Sandwiches and slices, and we've got hot party pies.
Party pies.
And tea and coffee.
All right. Well, look, thank you very much for hosting us here today, and hopefully the Broadmarsh Hall will be here in another 80 years and strong as ever.
We won't be, but
thank you very much, Tony.
Good on you. That's Donna Blackwell and Eileen McKenzie, who are both involved in the Broadmarsh Hall here in the Jordan River Valley. It's the 80th anniversary of the Country Hour, and we're going to have another outside broadcast on Thursday with the girls up northwest. Well, our next guest on the Country Hour, part of an organisation that's so vital in rural and regional areas, the Tasmanian Fire Service. And this is the time of the year over the next few months when the service really does step up. John Holloway, the new district officer for the Midlands. Welcome to the Country Hour, John.
Thanks, Tony.
We're looking out the window at the Broadmarsh Hall at one of the volunteer brigades you cover. Now, there's quite a few others right across the Midlands. Quite a few of them, isn't there?
Yeah, we've got in the Southern Midlands District, we've got about 23 brigades, and they're really strongly associated with neighbouring brigades as well outside of our district.
How are you going with numbers, especially with the important volunteers and the locals that keep these brigades going?
Yeah, we probably shouldn't sugarcoat the numbers. We do struggle in a lot of the towns for numbers these days, and I guess that's a reflection of rural Tasmania. A lot of the towns are smaller than they used to be. It's a bit of an ageing population. So our volunteer groups are always on the lookout for new members. So if there's anybody out there, just get in contact with us. Yeah.
What's involved in becoming a volunteer firefighter?
Well, there's a little bit more training than they used to be. You know, it used to be just show up at the station and somebody would tell you how to plug a hose in. You know, it used to be that simple. But as you can appreciate, the safety aspects of it now are a lot more involved. So there's a bit of basic training on the station, and then we'll get people onto some courses at the regional centres to polish things off. It usually takes about 6 months from somebody applying until they're truck ready.
Now, we're doing the broadcast as part of all the changes that we've seen over the 80 years since the Country Hour has been broadcast. A lot of changes in radio and in the way we cover stories. What about changes in firefighting? John Holloway, what have you seen in your time fighting bushfires?
I've been with the Tasmania Fire Service for 26 years and with the fire services in other areas for over 30, and there have been a lot of changes. There's a lot of changes in equipment and techniques these days, especially around structural firefighting. I think one of the big changes people would notice now are the amount of aircraft we use. It's not unusual for us to dispatch an aircraft at the same time as a local brigade now, particularly in days of high danger. And the fleet for TAS Fire Service has really been working through an upgrade over the last 10 years. So most of the brigades now have much more I guess, modern equipment, and it's all standardised to a great extent.
So the station we're looking at here at Broadmarsh, how many vehicles?
That's got two in it at the moment, a medium tanker and a light tanker. And yeah,
big tanks out the front, I noticed too, or tanks of water.
Yeah, there's a lot of tanks of water around, but they're a bit of a big change in building regulation as well. Most buildings out in bushfire-prone areas have got to have a supply of water for firefighting now when they undergo any change. So that's a bit of a change as well.
Now, we remember the Pelham fires of a few years back. How are things looking in the Midlands as we head into the warmer months? What's it looking like?
Yeah,
Should people be worried?
Not overly worried this year. You're looking at what we'd say is a normal year. So people should be preparing their properties as they usually would. We have a lot of advice on how to prepare your property, whether it's a rural property or a residential home. And a normal year for the TAS Fire Service usually looks like one or two major campaign fires, a half a dozen total fire bans, and some dry, blustery weather. But we're not... The weather outlook from the Bureau for this year is looking normal.
OK, we'll talk about that weather outlook in just a moment. We've spoken a lot about burn-offs by farmers, or some are saying that the lack of burn-offs compared to past years. What are you seeing?
I think the windows for burning off safely have been very tight this year. We've had that intermittent rain.
And the wind.
Yeah. So your window for a safe burn off can be hard to nail down, particularly in a wet build up to the summer. And just getting the feet on the ground to do it can be a little bit difficult to coordinate when that window's small. So we do have that shared responsibility about these sorts of things, though. Farmers do own their land. They can take measures to ensure that their land is safe as well.
Yeah, the Red Hot Tips is a good campaign.
That's an excellent program. Yeah, if you're not sure how to do it, there's plenty of people out there who haven't been involved in burning but might own a lot of land. Yeah, the Red Hot Tips program run through TAS Fire Service is one to get that information from.
Now, John Holloway, this hall we're in is an important part of the bushfire plan for Broadmarsh. Have we got all the other areas covered by safe areas to assemble if there's an emergency?
Yeah. So there's definitely worth having a little talk about nearby safer places and what might be nominated when there's a fire in your area. The thing to do, though, is to ensure that your land is safe when a bushfire comes through, because the sometimes termed and these nearby safer places as places of last resort, that means you haven't prepared in the first place. You know, you're not ready. If we're telling you to go there, that means that a lot of things have gone wrong in the first place.
So get your bushfire plan.
Get your bushfire plan ready. The other thing about those areas is they're not evacuation centres. There won't be people there with a cup of tea to look after you. Yeah.
Now, the message for the farming community when it comes to seeing smoke from now on, what should they do?
000. That's the thing to do. Ring 000. We'll know whether somebody in the area has registered a burn, or whether when there's a permit period, whether a permit's been issued, and we'll be able to send the right brigade.
Well, John, on behalf of the community, we really appreciate what the fire service does, and hopefully you won't have too busy a summer period.
Fingers crossed, it should be good, and we're looking for a normal year.
And thanks for joining the Country Hour today.
Thanks, Tony.
That's John Holloway, who's the new district officer for the Midlands. You're listening to the Country Hour, coming to you live from the Broadmarsh Hall in the Jordan River Valley. We're talking about the weather there, and let's check the latest on the weather with the man himself, Luke Johnston from the Bureau, who's travelled out to the hall to see us. G'day, Luke.
Hey, Tony, how you doing?
I'm going really well. Let's go through the forecast first off. Rainfall?
All right, rainfall so far. So to 9 a.m. this morning, 24 hours to 9 a.m, some parts of the east coast recorded 10 to 20 millimetres. Not the Midlands, though, only about 5 millimetres or so. And elsewhere about Tasmania, about that 5 millimetres. The highest was 24.6 millimetres at Noonamurra. And since 9 a.m, so the last 3 hours or so, there's been about a millimetre of showers recorded into the west. And for the rest of today, we'll see those showers continue into the west. There's the possibility of some light showers about elsewhere in Tassie, but not significant falls. Certainly not like we saw yesterday with the rain. So rest of today rainfall, another 2 to 5 millimetres to the west, less than 1 millimetre elsewhere, but parts of the north coast and northwest coastal towns expected to be pretty dry today, so not expecting much.
Okay, now the outlook for the next few days.
Yeah, so westerlies is the word of the week, as it often is. Maybe not so much in summer, but it's going to keep things cooler and a few showers pumping into the west coast. So light showers on Wednesday into the west, possibly during the morning in the north, but not significant falls. Thursday's a combination. There's a few light showers in the west and far south, but it's going to be quite warm, potentially into the mid to high 20s in parts of the southeast. Also fairly windy with afternoon wind gusts from the west-northwest, about 80 to 90 kilometres per hour, and elevated fire dangers on Thursday. So Thursday's the interesting day. We've got high fire dangers on Thursday for the northeast, east coast, Midlands, Upper Derwent Valley, Central Plateau, and Western districts.
So what sort of temperatures are we expecting there?
So in the southeast, sort of mid to high 20s, sort of low 20s up in the northeast. West coast, obviously cooler, where they'll have some showers, so a bit of a mix on Thursday.
And the warnings, what have we got?
All right, warnings-wise, today a strong wind warning current for southeastern coastal waters from Tasman Island to Low Rocky Point, and tomorrow a strong wind warning for eastern coastal waters from the northern tip of Flinders Island to Wineglass Bay, and for southern and western waters from Tasman Island to Sandy Cape.
And the coastal waters and swell to wrap up the forecast?
Yeah, coastal waters and swell, a lot of west and northwesterlies. We've got in the range of 15 to 25 knots, mostly, reaching 30 knots at parts of the south during this afternoon and evening, a bit lighter about the east coast. Tomorrow's winds northwesterly, 15 to 25 knots, reaching 30 knots about the west, south and northeast.
Now, Luke Johnston from the Bureau. The Bureau has issued the long-range forecast for the 2025 summer season, and it shows summer days and nights are likely to be warmer than average across most of Australia. What about Tasmania? Same?
Yeah, pretty well. The caveat with Tasmania is that I don't think summer's going to start till mid-January. We might get some tasters, like this Thursday, having a warm day, but it looks like December itself and the first part of January to be on the cooler end. Still warm, still summer, but just not, you know, the real stinking hot stuff. It looks like we'll see temperatures start to increase more confidently sort of latter part of January, and we might just have a delayed start to summer. So it probably means February, March, maybe even April's looking a bit warmer as well in Tas.
What about the most important thing of all, rainfall?
Yeah, so we're coming out of spring into summer, and typically in summer the rainfall sort of gradually becomes less and less as we go into the summer. Spring had quite a lot of rainfall coming into the west, so keeping the forests sort of wettish, but that's going away, so we're going to see a slow drying trend throughout the summer. So particularly when it gets to sort of February, March, looking at dry conditions for the west coast, there's a slight signal for above normal rainfall about parts of the east coast of Tassie during this summer, but I think that's more showing us the potential for some isolated thunderstorms and heavy bursts of rainfall rather than widespread persistent rain.
See the importance of the weather. Everyone stopped talking while you were giving that
yeah,
forecast.
I don't normally have people looking at me when I'm doing it. I just pretend they're not there.
Soil dryness, how's that looking?
Yeah, it's looking okay. So large parts of Tasmania, thanks to spring and October rainfall, like dams filled up, the soils at the top layer are fairly saturated. There is a little window where it still needs rainfall to saturate things about the southeast, sort of between Tas Peninsula up to around Buckland and then across to about Bothwell, that sort of triangle area. Still needs more rain to saturate things, but the rest of it looks like it's been reset. And if you do note that one area that I've just described is where the Nugent fire was not too long ago.
Yeah, interesting. Now, the elephant in the room. Lots of consternation about the website. Has that simmered down?
I think with the website, there is definitely a concerted effort to gather feedback and pump out some improvements as quickly as possible. So if you are experiencing some difficulties accessing things that you know and love or you're quite used to and it's really not working out, please provide that feedback. It is being looked at. It is being taken quite seriously, and there are updates coming.
Is it easy to find a way to give that feedback on the website? Because people are saying it's hard to find things.
Yeah, so on the website itself, you should still have the feedback banner popping up on the right-hand side. But if that disappears, use the search function on the website to look for our Contact Us page. And within our Contact Us thing, there's actually an option to give feedback. So that's probably the quickest way to do that.
I like the weather. There's nothing surer than change. Since you've been working with the Bureau, what sort of changes have you seen in the way you do the forecasts?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, so I'm going on about 12 years now. And when I started, we had hourly low-resolution satellite imagery. We had 10-minute radars. We had a whole bunch of observation sites that were every 30 minutes. And nowadays, it's 10-minute satellite imagery in really high resolution. It's 1-minute observation data. The radar's every 5 minutes. And even during my time, weather modelling has gone from really broad resolution, in my opinion. I'd say a 30-kilometre by 30-kilometre square is quite broad. But if you talk to people like Simon McCulloch, he remembers the days when you'd have a 250-kilometre by 250-kilometre resolution model. It's just so much information now, so much tools that the meteorologist has that we didn't have 10 years ago, 20 years ago, and just things to look at. So many sources of data. Everyone's got a model. Everyone's got an app. There's Ensemble Forecasts, which is a model run dozens of times, and you get dozens of different outputs. And the newer one in the mix is AI and machine learning, and figuring out how to unpack that, and is it useful, and can you trust it, and can you understand it? Something that I've been thinking a lot about is when you see an AI model that's trained on the past, it goes, this weather happened, 10 years ago, and then this happened afterwards, but it doesn't necessarily understand that that's not possible in this situation. So it gives you, there's a lot of things in the weather space now, it gives you something that looks realistic and it looks like it's going to happen, but you still need to sort of sense check it in a way. So I'm seeing an evolution in the last 10 years of the role of the meteorologist in Australia and the world of being able to interpret through all this noise and come up with something that is actually feasible, actionable, and something that people can use to make a decision.
Well, I tell you what, we really appreciate what the weather forecasters do for the country hour especially, and I know the listeners out there love hearing what the forecast is and love delving into it, so thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thanks very much for having me, Tony. I can't believe this is, I think, the second time we've met each other in person in more than a decade. It's great.
We've talked for how many years? Good on you, Luke.
Thanks, Tony.
Luke Johnston from the Bureau there on the Country Hour with some of the details on the weather forecast and also what's been happening with the website and what might happen in the future. You're listening to the Country Hour, coming to you live from the Broadmarsh Hall here in the Jordan River Valley. Tony Briscoe with you, celebrating 80 years of the Country Hour. I'm almost there, not quite that many years, but getting there slowly and feeling it sometimes. Our next guest in the 80 years of the Country Hour, there's probably not a week that's gone by without mention of a story containing the word weed. And in that 8 decades, farmers have been searching for ways to combat all sorts of weeds in all sorts of ways. But the one constant in that time is the weeds are still around and are not giving up easily. Our next two guests at Broadmarsh Hall are two women who are at the forefront of the weed war in the Midlands, the aptly named Maria Weeding and Mary Smythe. Welcome to the Country Hour.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Maria, are you winning the weed war?
I was just thinking, I've been at Southern Midlands Council just a couple of days a week doing natural resource management work, and when I came there, the works department were spraying lots of gorse around the roadsides, and there was so much to be done. It was unbelievable. Couldn't even see around corners. The gorse was so high in many places when you were driving, etc. And I have to say, they've kept at it for years and years, over 20 years that I know of. And certainly on our roadsides, we have been winning as far as gorse and broom goes. And we're now able to incorporate other weeds in some of our weed program each year. And from a farming point of view, yes, we're very busy from a farming point of view personally in my other life. And I would actually say that we are winning, but it also takes a lot of dedication.
Yeah, and it's an ongoing war, isn't it? Mary, what sort of programs are in place to help farmers alleviate the weed problem?
Oh, there's agronomists, there's myself as a weeds officer. I've got many contacts in many fields, anything from identification to, the sort of herbicides you want to use, the different sorts of eradication plans. There's such a lot of information out there. It can be a bit overwhelming, but if people get in contact with us at the council, we can find out what they're after, steer them in the right direction, help them out as much as we can on, weeds issues, land care issues, replanting. Maria and my other co-worker, Helen, have got absolute decades of experience, on-ground experience with a lot of this stuff. So, yeah, if we don't know, we can find out.
We mentioned gorse there. What are the other weeds of most concern in the Midlands?
Well, my top priorities at the moment are we have one single property in the entire state that has a particular thistle called stemless thistle. I aim to get that out of the just eradicate it. It's been there for 20-odd years, so it's going to be tough, but making progress. Serrated tussock, that is one nasty piece of work grass. Most people don't recognise it until it's just about taken over their paddocks and nothing eats it. Like it's not nutritious and it can do damage. It just takes over. And bone seed is another one that Southern Midlands have been working on for a good 20-odd years in mainly around Dysart and Green Valley. There's a couple of hot spots where we go back year after year. We know the landowners. We have a look. We physically pull this stuff out. We'll cut and paste it. And we've gone down from hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of plants to this year we found 27 individual plants in these areas. So we are winning, but, geez, you've got to be persistent.
And you've brought in some samples of the weeds. Some of them look really, really nice, don't they? You'd have them in your yard, wouldn't you, really?
Absolutely.
Well, the big pot out there, most of those in that pot were actually from my garden, I'm ashamed to say. So, and out on the verge, and, I just went for a short walk and I go, I'll put that in. And the rest, because I'm a weeds officer and I travel around and I see a lot of this stuff all the time, I mean, that's another thing. I see weeds everywhere I go. You can't unsee them once you know what they are. But, it doesn't take long for me to find a decent spread of
And just before
weeds.
You go, what's your background? You're a zoologist, aren't you?
My undergrad was wildlife and park management.
Yeah.
But I've also got horticultural and zookeeping qualifications. I was a zookeeper at Adelaide Zoo for 32 years.
Okay.
So, I'd done animals for a long time and now I'm doing plants and I really like
Not
plants.
Your typical sheep and cattle, though.
Oh, I did used to have a small holding with... I grew Wiltshire horns and Dexter cattle, so, yes, yeah. I do have a little bit... Not as much as Maria, of course, but, I do have a little bit of a bit of experience in that as well.
Okay, Maria, things going okay on the farm?
Yes, going okay, yes. We had a very slow start to the spring, but... going pretty well. Way too windy in October for spraying weeds. I would like to complain to Luke about that, but he just couldn't keep the wind away for some reason. So.
All right. Well, Maria Weeding and Mary Smythe, thank you very much for your time. We appreciate
thank
it.
You.
On the Country Hour, we'll be back with more in just a few moments' time. But it's time to check the latest news headlines with Ellie Ward.
Thanks, Tony. A man has died and another has been seriously hurt in a workplace accident in Brisbane. In Western Australia, police have confirmed a man has died while fighting a bushfire west of Ravensthorpe in the Western Australian southeast. The man in his 60s, believed to be a local resident, was using a front-end loader to create fire breaks yesterday afternoon. Locally in Tasmanian Premier Jeremy Rockliffe says he's nervous ahead of this week's upper house vote, which will determine whether a stadium can be built on Hobart's waterfront. The upper house will tomorrow start debating the controversial proposal, last estimated to cost $1.13 billion. Three independent MLCs need to support the stadium for it to go ahead. Five are still weighing up their options. A long-awaited review into federal government appointments dubbed Jobs for Mates has found a system that too often looks like nepotism. And the federal energy minister's refusing to say if he'd support extending the life of a coal-fired power station in New South Wales to avoid blackouts. An Australian energy market operator report warns the energy grid is not ready for Eraring's closure. More news at one.
The Country Hour, celebrating 80 years.
European breeds thrown in the mix, some Simmental and the odd Black Angus.
The Country Hour.
It's a bit of a fruit salad.
Celebrating 80 years of telling rural stories.
Food of the gods.
On ABC Radio.
The Tasmanian Country Hour.
Growing strong for 80 years.
This is Tony Briscoe, live from the Broadmarsh Hall on 936 ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
Yes, fantastic out here at the Broadmarsh Hall. The sandwiches are there, the cups of tea, the cups of coffee. So you've still got time to drop by if you're driving past. Just stop and drop in and say good day. Our next guest on the Country Hour, live from the hall, has a cherry orchard not too far down the road at Old Beach. He's also the president of Fruit Growers Tasmania, Nick Hansen. Great to have you on the program.
I was just enjoying the hospitality out the front, Tony. I had the sandwiches and the cup of tea. The ladies have done a beautiful job.
They've done a great job. Now, look, how are the cherries looking?
Late this year. I noticed Howard was talking here yesterday in this forum, and we're experiencing the same up at Old Beach, and certainly that we're certainly 8 to 10 days, which is a blessing in disguise and also not so great. So the blessing in disguise is that we've got a late Lunar New Year, which is 17th of February this year. So all the exports, excuse me, are going to be good. They're going to benefit from a later cherry crop.
Great.
But certainly Christmas is going to be under pressure to get enough fruit out for Christmas.
So that's because of the conditions in the lead up to harvest, that weird weather that we have?
It just won't stop windy. It's very, very blowy. It's very, very cold. The soil temperatures are cold. It's just not ideal. I liked the little chat you had with our weather friend before. So I'm going to catch up with him shortly and ask him if they can improve the weather forecasting for all the farmers in Tasmania. The new Bureau Bomb website is not the greatest. Certainly they've had some feedback on it. And the new forecast, which changed quite some time ago, this zero to pick a number that you want, is not working for the farming community.
Okay.
There's certainly some questions of the Weather Bureau from the farming community, yes.
Now, we will have cherries for Christmas.
We will. They're late, and it wouldn't surprise me if we struggle a little bit with volume. At this stage, it's a touch too early. We are getting some summer for a couple of days this week. But, yes, it's going to be touch and go. It's going to be tight.
How do you manage all this with the prospect of the need for workers and the need to tell them when they need to start?
Yeah, it is a juggling. We certainly have a time frame that we think we're going to be X between, you know, we'd normally like to be opening our cherry season on the 11th or 12th of December. That could push back to the 16th or 17th this year.
Yeah. How many workers this year?
Oh, it could be in our own orchards. We're down a little bit this year for various reasons, but certainly, you know, most of the workers this year that we're seeing from the increase in the palm workforce and certainly the backpacker demand is quite high again. We've certainly had lots of inquiry, so there'll be no issues with workers. There's good numbers around, so we'd expect a pretty much a normal season.
Yeah, we're hearing lots of backpackers around inquiring.
Absolutely.
Yeah, have you had the phone ringing off the hook?
Strong demand for jobs.
You do target the Tasmanian market for cherries in the lead up to Christmas, and one tradition is a trip to the cherry hut at Granton. How do you think the new bridge may affect that?
Yeah, the cherry hut at Granton is our retail outlet, which has been, you know, a very successful spot. Fresh cherries, 5 minutes away the orchard is, and it's great. Last year was going to be a real impact on our dollar turnover, and whilst, yes, it was down due to the bridge works, it wasn't as bad as what we thought. It is a labyrinth, the roads there, to get to the new system. The signage is not the greatest. So I'm not sure, Tony, I'm not sure. We're going to increase our advertising on commercial radio this year. But, yeah, it's a bit of a scary thought, to be truthful.
What about export markets for your cherries, mainland, overseas?
Strong demand this year. Obviously, Asia Fruit Logistica a little while ago. Hanson Orchards was well represented by Howard and the marketing team this year over there, and fantastic strong demand again from Asia. But again, seeking high-quality fruit from Tasmania, seeking large, high-quality firm fruit, and we can deliver on that.
Nick Hanson, our guest on the Country Hour, live from the Broadmarsh Hall, cherry grower and president of Fruit Growers Tasmania. Nick, if I'm right, next year will be 30 years since you planted your first cherry trees on your property. Is that right?
Certainly is. It's interesting reflecting on the 80 years of the Country Hour and what you've been going through. My first recollections of the Country Hour was certainly as a young man at not even probably grade 7 or grade 6 and sitting around the lunch table at Nan and Pop's. Always used to go to Nan and Pop's because the lunch was brilliant.
Always is.
Pop had always come in and he'd turn the radio straight on and you'd listen to the Country Hour for an hour, and then once he'd had his lunch, he'd go back out and he'd say, "Come on, young fella, off we go again."
Yeah.
And that was always my earliest memories of the Country Hour. They sat down religiously, and this would have been, you know, late 70s, maybe early 80s, and sat down and listened diligently to the radio for that 1 hour.
What convinced you to go into cherries?
Oh, we were apples forever. Of course, and then market forces, the commercial reality of apples back in the 80s, certainly through that side of our business, and then moved into cherries, of course, in the early 2000s. But just the commercial realities of the way the world was moving.
Have you changed the way you're doing things, the way you arrange the orchard, the way you grow the trees?
100%. 100%. I mean, we've got this thing at home, which, and it's starting to spread, is what does the 2040 cherry tree look like? That's certainly, we're working closely with TR and certainly through Fruit Growers Tasmania and Cherry Growers Australia and Horticulture Australia as to what the 2040 cherry tree looks like. So how does it change from what we're doing now? What are we trying to achieve? What do we need to have so that we're relevant and still commercially viable as Tasmanian growers? And it's a big focus.
And Nick, this valley we're in will get surety of water with the Greater Southeast Irrigation Scheme expansion. Yes. Can you see this area opening up to cherries, apples and other things?
It can. Vineyards? It can. We've bought 300 megs through that scheme for the southeast. We're still waiting on the letter of confirmation from TI at the moment, but we've put our hand up for 300 megs at home. So, yes, I mean, this area here essentially is a dryland farming area. But, yeah, it's an early area, which is not really the hitting zone for Tasmanian cherry industry, but certainly for other crops and other things, it certainly has benefit. And, I mean, you only got to look at the history of the TI water schemes throughout the state, just one of the best things ever initiative in Tasmania by the government and by TI. So hats off to them for them, and hopefully the schemes continue to be rolled out across all of Tasmania.
I'll let you get back to the tea, the cup of tea and the sandwiches. Thanks for your time, Nick
Thanks,
Hansen.
Thanks, Tony. Pleasure to come.
Yeah, good to see you. Terrific. Nick Hansen, the president of Tasmanian Fruit Growers. Fiona Breen is here with me also. G'day, Fiona. How are you
going? Hi, Tony. What a great turnout here. Yes. Happy birthday.
Yes, happy birthday to you too.
Oh, well, today we've got another farmer from around the place, someone that's also had some changes over his years from this area, Andrew Jones. Welcome to the Country Hour.
Afternoon, Fiona. Thanks for having me.
Now, we've got you've actually got a busy day, haven't you?
Yeah, we're shearing at the moment, so, it's interesting. We're dodging the rain, so we've had a pretty good run so far, so it's been good.
Cross fingers. I mean, I think the weather's getting better as the week goes on. How many days of shearing do you have?
We've done 2 weeks and we've hopefully finished at the end of this week.
Oh, well, good luck with that. Thanks for coming down. This is your local hall. You would have been down this way as a young tacker.
Yeah, behind me is the cricket oval. The pitch is still out there. I debuted many years ago and, I grew up here and spent the first 20 years of my life around this hall. So very fond memories. A few familiar faces around here too. A few legends, Steve Calvert, Harley Taylor, they're here.
Legends on the cricket field or?
Everywhere.
Legends of
everywhere,
the area.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Now, you moved off the farm for quite a few years and people know you within the travel industry, but you're back here now.
Yeah.
And and truly settled in.
Yes, I'm learning a very different trade. I'm glad I didn't do it when I was younger. I've learnt it's a pretty tough gig. Yeah.
You're not doing it in retirement. You can't say that. It's not a retirement job, is it?
My semi-retirement hasn't really gone to plan.
Well, tell me what's happening. You're shearing at the moment. How are the grapes looking?
Yeah, the grapes, it's a very good question. I went up there and had a look yesterday. I think the wind is finally starting to take its toll, I think. It's a very windy site up on the hill there, and I've never seen, the wind has just been relentless. It's been cold. It's been a good spring for rain, so you can't complain about the rain. But they're browning off a bit, so... To be honest, I'll say this publicly, I think the vineyards need a bit of a correction, so probably nature's maybe doing that.
What do you mean? Have you got too many in?
I think there's just a bit of an oversupply. I think last year's production was double 2023 and I'm not really sure that's sustainable at the moment, so others would disagree perhaps, but I think it's probably time for a little bit of a correction.
Yeah, well, we know your property is Invercarron or your wine is Invercarron as well. Yep. So, Andrew, what about the Greater Southeast Irrigation Scheme? Are you looking at that for your property?
So we're, I think this valley will be... restricted a little bit until that scheme comes on board. We're silly enough to put a vineyard in without guaranteed water. But, it was interesting, the previous comment, that it's a late site. We pick our grapes a month after Derwent Estate over the river. So we consider this a very late site up here.
Yes.
We pick
so
grapes...
So what's that, April or
11th
something?
Of May. We picked one of the varieties last year. So, Yeah, I think, but I think in maybe not in my lifetime, but I think the water scheme will probably transform this valley. And it's interesting, no one really, still only 10% of people from Hobart have ever been to Broadmarsh or know about Broadmarsh. So
it's that'll just sort change. Of just off the beaten track, isn't it?
So you've got the Derwent Valley and the Midland Highway, and everyone seems to head that way. But they have just sealed the road all the way through to just the Lyell Highway, and the traffic coming through here now is quite incredible compared to what it was even a few years ago. But you know, my father, who is not here today, but he used to move sheep from one farm to the other, and I think he'd probably have to pull over about two cars. Now you can't even get the sheep across the road. That's how busy this little road is now. So
yes. So your family's been here for generations. No doubt your father and probably yourself have listened to the Country Hour over the 80 years.
Yeah.
At different times.
We flickered on, and the old man would have listened to it driving around. I don't spend as much time in the tractor as I probably should listening to it, but no, it's a great show, and all the farmers all dial in and listen to it very regularly. So it's been a part of Tasmanian history and rural history.
Well, thanks so much for coming down to the hall and interrupting your shearing today. Good luck with it the next few days.
No worries. Thanks, Fiona. Thanks for having me.
Every year's different.
The Country Hour.
It's about connecting with people.
Part of your community for 80 years.
Beautiful.
Weekdays at noon on ABC Radio and on the ABC Listen app.
The Tasmanian Country Hour. This is Tony Briscoe, live from the Broadmarsh Hall on 936 ABC Radio Hobart and ABC Northern Tasmania.
The joys of live radio. We're back here at the Broadmarsh Hall. Deb Brown knows bees pretty well. We'll turn to bees now. And over the course of agriculture, we know bees play a vital role in pollination and keeping the plants happy. Deb Brown, welcome to the Country Hour. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
How are you going?
All right.
How's the farm, and how long have you been here in the valley?
I'm still a newbie, really, only 35 years.
Only?
Yeah, I don't know a lot of people.
When will you be an oldie?
probably when I'm Harley's age.
we've got Harley Taylor coming up. Looking forward to seeing and talking to Harley in a few moments' time. How have the bees coped with this weird weather?
I interviewed my husband in the last couple of days. I sort of said to him, well, what's the season like? And he said, slow, he said. So I said, oh, that's no good. And it's December and we're still feeding some of the bees. They're just not getting out. So even in our own paddock, I noticed this year, the capeweed, for instance, I could walk barefoot around the paddock and not tread on a bee. And normally years previous to that, they're everywhere. They're all over it. And it's just been too cold.
So the bees aren't too happy at the moment?
No. There has been a few areas where he said they're going to get a little bit of bush honey in, but most of the areas they're in at the moment, we're still feeding them. So.
What are you hearing from other beekeepers?
I'm not hearing anything, but I don't know if Peter, he goes to the meetings, I don't go. I just need a break. I shouldn't say that. I just don't go sometimes, but, yeah, I don't know.
But you could assume that they're... have the same problems?
Well, possibly, yeah.
Yeah. How many hives do you have, and what sort of plants are the bees accessing at the moment? Are they getting out there at all?
Well, we thought we were going to get a nice sort of blue gum this year because the blue gum's flowering, and so we haven't had any. My daughter, she's got she's got 150 hives, I think, and we've got probably just over three, and... But she said what she thought was blue gum's not very strong, but was nice. But yeah, I don't know what else they're getting at the moment. So
it's a family thing with the Browns, isn't it? The bees. You mentioned your daughter there.
Mm.
Tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, well, she started doing the bees when she was younger, and then she got stung a few times, and I told Pete he wasn't allowed to take her again because she come home with half a face all swollen, and I'd say, no, you're not taking her. She's a girl. And a girl doesn't want to be a girl. She wants to be out there and in amongst everything. So she went to work for a while and did a bit of graphic design and all that sort of stuff, which she's really good at, and I wanted to keep doing it. But no, I want to go with Dad. So she's sort of taken off with her own bees, and Peter's teaching her. And, yeah, she's really good. She's got her own label now, and
doing a good job.
Yeah, she's right in there having a go and she helps us out and, yeah.
Terrific.
When you leave all this to me, Mum and Dad, she says, when you leave all this to me, I'll look after it.
All right, Deb, good to see you again. Thanks for your time in the
thanks
country.
Thanks very much, Tony.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Harley Taylor, look at you. You limped over here to the microphone. What's happened?
I just happened to find a trailer with a one-tonne of water was a bit too heavy to land on my foot.
And it landed on your toes.
So that's about 5 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So Stephen Calvert lives along from me, so we thought, oh, we'll have to go up and see this Tony. We talk a lot with Andrew Barley from up north over our beans. So I thought, well, I have to go up and have a look. Anyway, I got a surprise when I seen him. He had a few whiskers on his face.
Richard Bailey mentions you quite a bit because you tell him how good your broad beans are and how good your tomatoes are. How are the beans going this time?
Tomatoes are a bit of a disaster this year. We put them out and along came the Weather Bureau and blew them away. So the tomatoes and now with my foot, I think I might have to go to the supermarket and buy them.
Really?
Yeah. But I'll have to apologise to Bailey, we haven't been up north. Becomes too far to drive when your foot's not working. So they just have to do without me. But now I'm finding lately going up to Parana is, my old friends are all disappearing. But we're still holding in there.
Yeah. Now, how old are you, Harley?
87.
And a funny thing happened when you arrived here today. You saw somebody who you knew.
Only my sister. She was a big surprise.
You didn't know she was here? She didn't know you were here?
I didn't know she was here, and she's I'd ask her, I think she's 95. I'm the youngest. Family's all still alive, which is good. Mum lasted to 101, so yeah, should have a few more years left in me, as long as they don't drop a trailer on me, big foot.
Well, it's a good lesson out there for all the farmers to really take care of what they do. And we've been banging on about safety on farm for a while now, so, yeah.
Yeah, it's something I've sort of been semi-retired for about 4 or 5 years. Maybe I should have stopped earlier.
All right. Well, Harley, it's good to meet you and lovely to see you, but get better quickly, will you?
We will.
Good on you.
And I'll catch up with you next year with the beans might grow again.
Okay, Harley Taylor there. On the Country Hour, live from Broadmarsh Hall, Fiona Breen.
Hello there. Yes, and while we get organised with our next guests, I'll just introduce you here to some of the listeners. Now, can you give me your name?
Marie Heron.
Marie, you had a couple of stories about listening to the Country Hour.
I was trying to think when I first started listening to the Country Hour. So I have to blame my grandfather. That's my Uncle Harley here. So grandfather is Ken Taylor from Eldersley Park. And I was pretty crook when I was a kid. So I lived a long time, a couple of years with my grandparents. And he had this system of coming in of a lunchtime, have lunch, lay down and shush, listen to Country Hour. So I learnt to listen to Country Hour. I'd already heard it, but not listened to it. And then on top of that, we had Blue Hills afterwards.
I think a lot of people remember Blue Hills, that cereal.
Yeah, it taught me to listen to Blue Hills as well. And I always thought, well, Country Hour, yeah, all right, it's got the farm on it, I understand that. But it was my brother doing stock droves with the chopping family at Ooze, and he come back and told me that you never go near the truck at lunchtime because Reg was listening to Country Hour. And he went up near the truck, not knowing the time, because he was only 12 at the time, and he says Reg wasn't, he was asleep. So is Country Hour designed for farmers to have an excuse to have a sleep in the middle of the day?
We don't want them falling asleep while they're listening, but...
Well, they always say when you go to alter the... I told you my dad used to tune the radio into ABC and throw the knob away so you couldn't change it. So I assume that it was designed for farmers, and farmers say, oh, I was listening to that. It's just hypothetical.
Well, thanks so much for coming down to the Broadmarsh Hall. Coming up. Oh, you came up from the Tasman Peninsula. Thanks so much for coming up. And we'll cross back to Tony Briscoe.
Thanks, Fiona. One of the big agricultural industries in farming in the state is the dairy industry. Our next guest on the Country Hour has a fairly new dairy on a historic farm just down the road from Broadmarsh Hall. Welcome to the Country Hour, Natalie Geard.
Thank you, Tony, and it's great to have you up here at the Broadmarsh Hall.
How are things going on farm at the moment? And what's it been like over winter with the cows?
Oh, it's been a really interesting season for dairy. Obviously, it's been pretty dry throughout the year, probably, and windy in October as well. But coming in to November, we've had about 100 mils of rain over the last month, which has really helped. It's made silage a little bit tricky. But, yeah, definitely as we're finishing that up and heading into hay season, we hope it dries out a little bit, but the rain's definitely welcome.
Happy with how the dairy's operating?
Yeah, we're milking 420 cows at the moment. Obviously, it was a little bit challenging earlier in the year with the not a lot of pasture growth, but we're starting to see that now. So, yeah, things are definitely improving and looking up.
Now, the dairy industry is important to you for another reason, your involvement in the Big Dairy Conference, which will be held in Melbourne in just over 2 months.
Yes, that's right, Tony, the Australian Dairy Conference. My husband, Ben, who is the dairy farmer, he has been involved in it for a long time because it's a farmer-led board and a farmer-led organisation. So, yes, he roped me in and, it's become one of the biggest forums on the dairy calendar now and will be held in Melbourne, 11th to the 13th of February. And, yeah, we're really quite excited. The theme for this year is more than milk, because we know that, you know, obviously dairy farmers are all here to produce milk, but it's really important to, you know, focus on the areas that farmers need to look after themselves, their mental health, the sustainability of their farms, profitability versus productivity. So we're really trying to equip Australian dairy farmers with the tools that they need to move forward in that regard.
And it's a big job putting it all together, the jigsaw pieces of the puzzle.
It is. We've got a Victorian chair this year in Ella Credland from Western Victoria, and it's all farmer-led programming committee, so it's very heavily farmer-based, and, yeah, we're pretty excited. So, Carrick, we normally have quite a few Tasmanians come over for it, so, yeah, we're quite, you know, encourage them to go. We find once they come, they really get a lot out of it, with probably about 750 members of Australia's dairy industry, and we find once they come back every year because they really find it a valuable investment, I guess, for their business.
Fantastic. Good luck with it.
And Thank you.
Thanks for turning up here today at the Broadmarsh Hall.
Thank you.
Natalie Geard, who runs a dairy farm with her partner. Down the road, Tony Bisdy. Everyone knows the name Tony Bisdy, councillor for 40 years, former mayor. G'day, Tony.
Yeah, g'day, Tony.
You and I have something in common. I have a wife called Sue, so do you.
All right, I have a wife called Sue too.
So, Tony and Sue.
She's probably listening too.
Yeah. You've seen many changes, haven't you, over the years?
Oh, we have. But firstly, welcome to Southern Midlands, Tony, and the Country Hour, and happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you.
On behalf of the council, we welcome you.
Yeah, it's been lovely presenting, and I love going out to the farms. I love meeting the people and love telling the stories. You'd be the same being a councillor. It's a similar thing. You're going out, you're meeting people, you're hearing their views, you're acting on what they're telling you they want to see happen.
Yes. Look, it's I think it's a great part of being a councillor, of going out and meeting the constituents. And we are very fortunate in Southern Midlands. We have a very stable council, a very progressive council, and Importantly, we have a wonderful staff headed by Tim Kirkwood, the General Manager, and you've interviewed two of our employees here this morning, and we're very fortunate to have that. It makes a real teamwork between the councillors and the staff and the constituents of Southern Midlands.
And just one quick question. Is it true one of your ancestors imported feral deer into the state?
I believe so. I think they went to Hutton Park in the... I think they were brought in Hutton... they wouldn't have imagined the explosion of the numbers that are around today, and the control measures that they're debating about controlling the feral deer, because unfortunately they're in certain parts of the state, and certainly in
Midlands,
Central Midlands, Northern Midlands, they're in plague proportions, and they do cause a lot of damage to the environment.
All right, Tony, well done on the work you've done for the community, and thanks for turning up here today.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for everyone for turning up here today at the Broadmarsh Hall. Thanks to Luke, thanks to Fiona, and thanks to all our guests. And the birthday of the Country Hour tomorrow, the 3rd of December.